Imagine a world where your fate depends on whether a judge had lunch or if a police officer's disgust response was triggered by your appearance. This isn't dystopian fiction, it's our current reality. Our criminal justice system operates on the assumption that humans make rational, conscious decisions, but psychological research reveals a troubling truth. Our minds work largely outside our awareness. From police investigations to jury deliberations, implicit biases shape outcomes in ways we rarely acknowledge. The result? A system that proclaims fairness while systematically producing injustice, particularly for minorities and the disadvantaged. When emergency responders found David Rosenbaum lying on a Washington, D.C. sidewalk, they immediately labeled him drunk rather than injured. This snap judgment had fatal consequences. Rosenbaum had actually been violently assaulted and died from his injuries after receiving delayed medical care. Why? The vomit on his jacket triggered disgust, a powerful emotion that affects both physical and moral judgments. Studies show that physical disgust makes our moral judgments more severe, creating both physical and moral distance from those we perceive as other. Once we label someone, we unconsciously seek confirming evidence while dismissing contradictory information, a psychological tunnel vision that pervades our justice system. What could make innocent people confess to crimes they didn't commit? More than you might think. When investigators presume guilt, they interpret ambiguous behaviors as deception and use aggressive tactics, creating a dangerous feedback loop. Once a confession exists, everyone views all evidence through a guilt lens. Juan Rivera spent 19 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Despite contradictions in his confession and exonerating DNA evidence, the confession's power prevailed. In 8 of the first 250 DNA exoneration cases, suspects confessed despite pretrial lab results proving their innocence. Plea bargaining worsens this problem, with 90-95% of defendants admitting guilt for leniency rather than risking harsher sentences at trial. James Ochoa, though innocent, pled guilty under pressure and served 16 months before the actual perpetrator was caught. Would you risk decades in prison when pleading guilty means freedom in months? Why do some people commit crimes while others don't? While we often blame character flaws, environments may be more influential than we realize. The Bulger brothers from South Boston demonstrate this. One became America's most notorious gangster, while the other rose to become president of the Massachusetts Senate. Our surroundings directly trigger behavior in unexpected ways. Research shows masks increase aggressive behavior in children by up to 300%, an effect that vanishes when anonymity is removed. Similarly, participants holding guns were 45% more likely to perceive neutral facial expressions as hostile. The Milgram experiments revealed how situational factors lead ordinary people to commit harmful acts. By altering environmental elements like proximity to victims or authority presence, researchers could dramatically shift compliance rates for administering potentially lethal shocks. When we fail to regulate weapons, allow neighborhoods to deteriorate, or provide few alternatives to gang membership, we share responsibility for resulting crimes. This perspective breaks down the us versus criminals barrier, promoting empathy and systemic interventions rather than mere punishment. I'll never forget that face. This confident statement carries tremendous weight in courtrooms, yet psychological research reveals a troubling reality. Human memory isn't a video recording. It's a reconstruction highly susceptible to distortion. Of the first 250 DNA exonerations in the United States, over 75% involve mistaken eyewitness identifications. We don't notice everything around us. In one study, fewer than 25% of participants could locate fire extinguishers they passed regularly. When retrieving memories, we rebuild them, filling gaps with assumptions and later information. Research shows recollections are only about 80% accurate, yet a quarter of inaccurate memories come with complete certainty. Memory accuracy depends on underestimated factors. cross-racial identifications increase error rates by 50%, while stress impairs memory. Even subtle behaviors can corrupt witness memories. When an experimenter merely stroked his chin, people were 3 times likelier to report seeing a beard on a clean-shaven man. Most officers receive little training in proper interview techniques, often asking suggestive questions that create false memories. Chief Justice John Roberts once claimed, "Judges are like umpires. They apply rules without bias." Research, however, reveals judges cannot separate their identities from their judgments. Studies show clear partisan bias. Democratic appointees favor minorities, workers, and immigrants, while Republican appointees favor big business and government. Personal characteristics matter too. Male judges with daughters are 16% more likely to rule for women's rights. Judges often rely on intuition rather than deliberative reasoning. Israeli parole board studies show judges granted parole 65% of the time after food breaks, but rarely before, regardless of case merits. Would you be comfortable knowing your freedom might depend on when your case is heard? Justices frequently make gut decisions first, then selectively research supporting evidence while ignoring contradictions. More knowledgeable individuals often display greater bias, as additional information makes it easier to support preferred conclusions. Most judicial bias operates subtly, like a misaligned subway step that trips people daily until data reveals the pattern. With less than 5% of the world's population, but nearly 25% of its prisoners, the United States has created an unprecedented system of mass incarceration. For every 100,000 Americans, 716 are imprisoned, far exceeding rates in Iran, 284, Canada, 118, and Germany, and surpassing even the Soviet gulags at their height. Solitary confinement epitomizes our punishment philosophy. Prisoners exist in windowless cells smaller than parking spots for 23 hours daily with virtually no human contact. John McCain, who endured this as a POW, called it an unendurable torture. Research confirms human connection is essential for survival. Adequate social relationships are as vital as quitting smoking, and infants deprived of human contact can die despite proper nutrition. Yet, despite knowing isolation's devastating psychological effects, which the U.S. military found more effective than physical torture, we routinely subject thousands of prisoners to this treatment, often for minor infractions. What if we treated crime like a public health issue rather than a moral failing? As we understand genetic and environmental factors in criminal behavior, it increasingly resembles disease, making our blame framework less justifiable. Norway's Halden prison exemplifies this alternative approach, with no bars, private rooms, and communal kitchens where staff prioritize relationships over rules, recognizing inmates will eventually rejoin society. We can improve our system by reducing reliance on faulty human processes. Virtual proceedings with avatars could eliminate appearance-based biases. Problem-solving courts treat issues like addiction as diseases, anticipating relapse and using evidence-based techniques instead of punishment. Research confirms these humane approaches reduce recidivism. True justice requires acknowledging our psychological limitations and designing systems that account for them. By recognizing our shared humanity and the environmental factors shaping behavior, we can create a system that delivers equal justice. One that heals rather than harms, rehabilitates rather than punishes, and makes communities safer.